Coming up next, this week in computer hardware, it's a great week to buy a new GPU. We've got Radeon Argonne 280X reviews, NVIDIA's price drops on the GTX 780 and 770, the hint of a new NVIDIA GPU, help building your first PC, Lenovo's most excellent yoga tablets, and the hell of static. All that and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 241, recorded November 1st, 2013. It's a great week to buy a new GPU.
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Are you looking to upgrade your IT skills or prepare for certification? IT Pro TV offers engaging and informative tutorials streamed to your Roku, computer, or mobile device. For 50% off the lifetime of your account, go to itpro.tv/Twitch and use the code Twitch50. And by Ting.com. Ting is a mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay for what you use, doesn't require a contract, and offers unlimited devices on one account. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit twitch.ting.com. That's twitch.ting.com.
Welcome to Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware. I'm your host, Patrick Norton, joined as always by Mr. Ryan Shrout. Ryan, are you excited to be here This Week in Computer Hardware?
Of course. Of course. It's a different recording time for us than normal. It's a Friday show rather than a Thursday show. So
we should be more awake than we usually are.
It's a little earlier in the day, yeah.
You have been testing up a storm. You are actually going to be missing a major basketball game tomorrow night because of some benchmark testing of products we cannot discuss at the moment, but we should discuss NVIDIA, their reaction to the Radeon R9 release, the 290. Basically, like the Radeon R9 290 delivering Titan-level performance or near-Titan-level performance for half the price. NVIDIA turns around and drops the prices on the GTX 780, the 770, announces the GTX 780. I mean, this is a good time to be buying a graphics card, or is that just me?
No, I mean that's definitely the case. I think the 290X kind of took NVIDIA by surprise a little bit, like in terms of actually how good of a performer it was going to be. There were rumors, you know, during the weeks leading up to it that all the 290X was going to be faster than the Titan or faster than the GTX 780, and nobody. You know, it's kind of like, I don't really know how they're going to be able to do that on this architecture with this process technology and those types of things. And it turned out to be the case. And NVIDIA doesn't really have new products yet to really put out there. So, when you don't have a new product to put out in that space, your answer is to drop prices, adjust deals. And I think they did a pretty good job with that, though, they took the GTX 780 from $650 to $499. So it's a $150 drop, which brings it $50 lower than the AMD Radeon R9 290X launched just last week. So that's pretty competitive. And then they also dropped the GTX 770 from $399 to $329. And that's really going up against the the R9 280X. That was the rebrand of products from a few weeks ago. And we said at the time that the GTX 770 doesn't look like nearly as good a deal anymore. It's getting beat in performance, yet it's asking almost $100 more for the price. And now they've kind of revamped that. They've dropped the price of the 770, so it's competitive now with the pricing and performance of the 280X. And they did the same with the GTX 780. Price drops, if that's not enough for you, they also are... The tables have flipped here with the game bundles all through all of basically 2013 and the last half of 2012. AMD was the company who was pushing these game bundles and these game deals and what benefits you're going to get besides just the good hardware. Now, NVIDIA, if you buy a 770 or a 780 or a Titan, you're going to get Splinter Cell Blacklist, Batman Arkham Origins, and Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag included for free. And you get $100 off a shield if you want to take them up on that offer as well. So what I think is interesting about this is compared to the most recent AMD Never Settle bundles, these three games are like brand new. When they announced this, Batman Origins, Arkham Origins wasn't out yet. And Assassin's Creed 4, I think, comes out today or tomorrow. It's very soon. So these are like games that chances are very few people actually already own, which was kind of the major complaint people had about the end, the kind of the end of the AMD Never Settle bundle, was that I kind of either don't want these games or I already own them. So it kind of takes away some of the appeal of a game bundle. But here now you're getting three pretty good games, right? You know, Assassin's Creed is a big title. Batman's a big title. Splinter Cell is a big title. If you buy a 760 or below, you get Assassin's Creed and Splinter Cell. They kind of leap off the Batman there. And it's $50 off of the Shield instead of $100. So, another piece of news that they announced, they announced the 780 Ti 2 weeks ago. Nothing else really much else about it. Now they've released the shipping date, which will be November 7th, and the price of $699. So in one kind of press release, they totally revamped their $300 and above product stack,
right?
Which is kind of interesting. It's obviously in direct response to what AMD did. Do you think this changes anything for how people will be buying for the holiday?
I was going to say, like, this is completely about not losing momentum going into Black Friday and the holiday shopping season. I mean, the word panic comes to mind, although it's not particularly, I don't think that's a justified, I think panic is probably not accurate, but it's just, the first thing I thought was like, oh, if only they dropped the price in the GTX 762, it'd be like, I dropped the trigger on one today. Obviously, I'm still delaying as long as possible on my next GPU upgrade. But yeah, I mean, I think... you absolutely nailed it. I think they got surprised on this one. I think they couldn't believe the performance they were seeing. And, man, these are big drops. $649 to $499, $399 to $329. These are big, healthy drops. I'm not a huge Assassin's Creed 4 fan based on the responses I've got from some friends that are playing it. But it's a good bundle, and it should help drive sales. I think it's a really good time to be buying a GPU. And, man, you've already looked at the first, three R9 280Xs that are overclocked. So things are moving fast.
Yeah. I want to, before we completely transition to that, I want to say that the 780 Ti is interesting. They haven't talked about what its performance level is going to be, but they've announced a price and an availability date. So what's interesting for NVIDIA here is they already know where the 290X sits in terms of performance, and they are pricing it $150 more than that, right? So the new 780 is $499. You go to $549 for the 290X, and now they're going to ask $150 more than that for the 780 Ti. So the 780 Ti is going to have some pretty big, performance expectations to live up to in order to justify that price. People have been asking about the Titan. Is that price cut coming? As far as I know, that price cut is not coming in the foreseeable future. The Titan is still going to be $999. The key differentiator there is the Titan, I think a lot of people are bought it that aren't gamers, that are GPU users, because the Titan is basically a GK110 with all double precision floating point enabled, which is important for some GPU computing aspects. And all the other GTX cards do not have a fully enabled double precision kind of compute block there. So that there's, I think NVIDIA is selling as many Titans as they can make, maybe not to gamers 100% exclusively, but to other markets. So I wouldn't expect those prices to drop.
Places where people are used to paying $2,000 to $3,000 for a GPU, and suddenly a $1,000 GPU seems like a bargain to them. That actually makes perfect sense to me. Milk that cow as long as you can. Well, profit, I mean, let's talk about, should we talk about what's going on with the 280X? And the overclocked 280Xs, because you looked at cards from Asus, MSI, and Sapphire. I'm gonna drop a spoiler here, people, so brace yourselves. Two of these cards got gold awards. One card got silver awards, and the performance is pretty good. Yes.
Yeah, and I think some people might be surprised which one of those two got the silver versus the gold, because the three cards, two of them are somewhat similar. The Asus and the MSI cards, all three of these use custom PCB. They're all using different coolers. They're all kind of, revamped from the ground up. The Asus and the MSI have better PCB. They're using better components. They're using better coolers, better fans, They both have fairly modest overclocks on the order of 50 to 70 megahertz on the core speed. Asus overclocks the memory speed a little bit, while MSI does not. They're both really, really good cards. But the Sapphire card actually is overclocked by 150 megahertz on the clock speed, which is more than 10%. And it's overclocked on the memory speed at the same time. And it has the, as the term I use in the review, the meanest looking cooler of the bunch. It has what I think is actually pretty cool looking design, right? It's got a lot of yellow and black, and it's got some orange on there. The Sapphire logo lights up with an LED. The orange block there at the top kind of hides access points for reading voltages for super extreme overclockers. This card uses 2 8-pin power connectors instead of an 8 and a 6-pin power connector. It's got 3 fans instead of 2. It's a little bit longer than all the other ones. It also uses a custom PCB and components that way. But so if you look at just performance out of the box, the Sapphire card is going to be the best performing. It makes sense. It's got the highest overclocks on the CPU and on the GPU and the memory. So it's going to perform the best. Next would be the Asus card, followed by the MSI card. So that's kind of all, that all kind of fits as how you would expect. The problem I have with the Sapphire card is that it uses significantly more power, and it has it's significantly louder at the same time. So if you look at kind of like the power, temperature, noise levels of it, you'll find that the Sapphire card uses 50 watts more power than the other two cards, and it's significantly louder when it's under a full gaming load, right? So I mean, it's enough that I question the value of the extra performance for sacrificing that much of the sound level, right? And one of the things that all three of these retail cards, well, the Asus and MSI card in particular, do is that they are quieter than the reference cards, right? Which is a plus. That's one of the things you're supposed to do with these custom designs is make them better. But you can see clearly in that graph that's shown on the screen right now that we're talking 10 dBA more, which doesn't, you know, it's not a 10 dBA difference, doesn't really tell you a whole lot until you know that what that specific range is. But going from 35 dBA to 44 dBA under load is a significant jump in sound level. So if you're a gamer that games with headphones or you've got the speakers turned up all the time, noise like that doesn't bother you, then the Sapphire card is going to make a lot of sense because it's got the most overclocking headroom. It comes out of the box overclocked the most. And its price is, it's like a $50 premium over a reference card. I think it's $349 still. The Asus and the MSI are probably $10 over reference prices, not very much at all for what I think is a definite advantage of getting custom coolers and custom PCB designs. So, you know, all three of these would make good cards for a gamer. But my personal stance, which is obviously all what I write on, is I would prefer a card that is a little bit quieter, a little bit cooler, that lets me overclock if I want to, but without necessarily, you know, being as that loud. The Sapphire is still a good card, don't get me wrong, but, you know, it's all about your personal preference. And that's when you have a, when you're doing like a roundup, a comparison of three cards, they're all based on the same GPU, have the same amount of memory, same shader count, all that kind of stuff. It really comes down to these little nuances to determine which one, you know, you want to keep.
Yeah, and if, hey, look, if you're attracted to the idea of having a giant cooler and a twitch more overclocking out of the box, spend the extra $35, get the Sapphire. I mean, I think you made it pretty clear. And the truth is either any of these three cars would be outstanding. And I'm still kind of blown away by the R929. You just, man, coming out of the gate hard and relatively inexpensive for what it's delivering. It's good stuff. Yeah. Yep. ARM TechCon 2013, Altera to produce ARM V8 chips on Intel 14 nanometer fans. Excuse me, fabs. Oh, my goodness. So February this year, Intel and Altera announced that they would be partnering to build Altera FPGAs using the upcoming Intel 14 nanometer Tri-Gate process technology. This is a big deal. I mean, how do we explain just how big a deal this is, Ryan? I mean, or at least maybe it's just to me. I mean, it's just the whole idea that one, that ARM is going to be using Intel technology, ARM is going to be on Intel process. you know, and then news is coming out that Altera is going to be included in ARM-based processing cores, specifically those in the ARM V8 64-bit architecture starting in 2014. Altera's high-end Stratix 10 FPGA that uses four ARM Cortex A53 cores will be produced by Intel Fabs. Man, this is interesting. Or so am I just overthinking this?
No. It's a really kind of weird space to be in, right? So Intel is trying desperately to get into that ARM space. They want to be in tablets. They want to be in the low-power, low-cost tablets. They want to be in smartphones. And they've kind of, over the last 3-4 years or so, kind of slowly stepping down their processors' power levels in order to get into those particular devices. And right. All of the analysts, all of the commenters, all the media, you know, the one thing that we've always kind of hung our hat on for Intel is their big advantage, even though they have all these disadvantages with the x86 backlog and all this, their one advantage is their process technology, that they're always a node or two ahead of what TSMC and GlobalFoundries and those guys are doing. And that will eventually be their kind of, you know, feather in the cap, if you will, of being able to finally get competitive in that space, if not totally dominate it, you know, 10 years from now or 5 years from now. And this news that crept out, we had known since February that Altera was going to make a chip with Intel's fabs. That was kind of like the big announcement. It's like, oh, Intel's actually opening up their fabs to other people. That in and of itself was pretty interesting. But now the news came out that, well, one of these FPGAs is actually going to have Cortex A53 processors on there. And now you're getting into the, oh, is Intel going to make ARM chips, right? So is this going to get rid of that one advantage they have? Intel, you know, after I published this story, Intel kind of came back and said, nothing in your story is wrong, but the FPGAs that they're building are not focused on markets that we are targeting, right? So they said, like, FPGAs are primarily focused on the markets of communication, industrial, military applications. They're not really used as application processors, and thus are not going to directly compete with Intel's processors in the phone tablet space, at least not today with this iteration. So I think it's still a very important piece of news, a very important note for people to kind of like take. Is Intel's foundry business going to push ahead and try to get all these other customers to fill fab space? Or is their processor division going to win out and say, no, you can't do that. We are dependent on that for our chances of winning this battle in the long run. Right.
Yeah. So it's just
weird.
Weird and exciting and scary and thrilling and probably way too inside baseball for a lot of people listening right now. Slightly less inside baseball, but still ARM news. The Mali T700 GPU family, ARM refreshes too. Josh wrote this up for PC Per. Quote, ask most computer users from 10 years ago who ARM is, and very few would give the correct answer. Some well-informed people might mention Intel and StrongArm or Xscale, but ARM remained a shadowy presence until we saw the rise of the smartphone. Absolutely accurate there. It's kind of funny. ARM was always chumping out stuff in the background, but it wasn't until the iPhone and the Android phones, and I suppose we could count BlackBerries and such, but yeah, it's huge. ARM produces all of these custom parts for Samsung, Apple, Qualcomm, MediaTek, Rockchip, NVIDIA, all built around the ARM V7 architecture. Apple being the first to release the first ARM V8, the 64-bit system on a chip, and 84 Mali licenses. So, I mean, this is exciting looking at this. Mali Momentum through 2013, first slide on there. 84 Mali licenses, 152 million units shipped in 212, more than 230 different devices, i.e. we own the mobile world at the high end. 300 million units year to date, 2013. 2013 has already seen shipments double from 2012. Number one Android GPU supplier, number one in Android tablets, number one in digital smart TVs. This is interesting stuff. Now, you get a couple paragraphs into this, and it's like, with the growth of visual computing, ARM also dedicated itself towards designing competent graphics portions for their chips. The Mali architecture is aimed at being an affordable option for those without access to their own graphics design groups, i.e., NVIDIA and Qualcomm. you know, it's... it's going to be interesting to watch, right? Because they are trying to drive this to be a considerably more powerful graphics device, along with obviously a highly competent mobile device in terms of basic mobile computing. And I mean, it's crazy. You're looking at like our Mali T760. So basically increased GPU and system on a chip energy efficiency, i.e. the same or more performance for this, for a given amount of power, more scalable, more memory scalability, reduced bandwidth consumption. Are there any particularly radical things doing? I mean, they've got the tiling unit, memory management unit, two channels of cache, and then the Ace Lite in there. But is there anything particularly radical about what they're doing with this architecture?
No, it's mostly pretty iterative over what they had before. It's really what's interesting in this market for GPUs in this market is the need to balance die space, power consumption, and performance creates a really odd combination of things. Like with the discrete GPU market, you still kind of have to base it on that. But die space, you know, if you're willing to spend a little bit more money, you can you can make a bigger die. With these SoCs, you know, these GPU vendors, remember, they're building IP. They're not building an actual product, an IP that, you know, ARM hopes somebody will license the Mali GPU to input into their SoC. And then they have to say, well, I've only got 15 square millimeters to give to a GPU. What's the best GPU you can give me for that that die area, that die space? And, you know, it's a lot more work than I think most people believe it would be. And I think most people might be surprised to find out that there are as many competitors in the SoC GPU IP space as there are, right? And that ARM, even though ARM processors dominate the market for SoC, their GPUs are kind of like just starting to ramp up. They're like, oh yeah, this turns out this is a really important area. We want to make sure that we're, you know, not just making competent parts, but we're making good parts that are competing with the likes of what Qualcomm's putting out, what Imagination's putting out, and what NVIDIA is going to be putting out relatively soon.
Yeah, it's funny that they've trademarked optimized for Android. They're trying to speed up the time to market for the integration of these GPU cores. Mali T760, 400% energy efficiency of the Mali T604, which is kind of their first serious mid to high-end architecture. Scalable to 16 cores, major bandwidth reduction. It's an interesting battle because we're expecting unbelievably sophisticated graphics on these mobile devices now, especially if you take a look. Obviously, we'll talk about the benchmarks on the new iPad Airs in a couple minutes. The idea there is some serious computing power showing up on tablets, and that's going to drive at the high end. That's going to drive more sophisticated applications, more power hungry applications, which is going to hopefully for the manufacturers drive the adoption of new hardware or hardware updates. But this is like $400 and up devices too. You're not going to have a $150, $200 Android tablet with 16 cores. Not yet. But as we always mention, the longer you wait, the farther down the power goes, and you know, the more power you get for the amount of money you invest. It's an interesting article. It's an interesting concept. You always think about ARM being like, hey, it's battery friendly and it's in all the phones, but this is kind of interesting stuff. And it's also... I've been babbling about this for a couple of weeks. I'm a biscuit away from just trying to see if I can get through an entire week doing all of my work on an 8-inch tablet. A couple of friends of mine have been torturing me about that.
You try first and let me know.
I'll try first and I will let you know. Man, Broadwell K late 2014. What's the word on that?
So this is just kind of one of those traditional leaked roadmap stories where, take it for what you will, but they're talking about Broadwell K, which would be, we think, the kind of high end, you know, user installable part, that we're used to with the K series from Ivy Bridge and Sandy Bridge and Haswell. But they're showing up very, very tail end of 2014. With a new chipset refresh as well. We're talking about Z9 series chipsets, I guess. So it looks like 9 series will be out well before Broadwell will. So that would be kind of interesting to see what features they might add or performance capabilities they may try to get into a platform refresh before a processor refresh. Scott wrote this up. He says one possibility is that they are having issues with clock speeds and getting the power down would be my guess. So that why would they release these K-series parts first? It would be, well, we've got Broadwell working, but we've only got it working for high wattage situations, you know, comparatively to what you would get into notebooks and tablets. So let's just go ahead and release this first. We'll tweak and work on the rest of the product portfolio as we go through 2014 and into 2015. But this is also good news for people that thought we may never see, you know, these parts released for the mainstream market, right? It doesn't say for sure that these aren't soldered down parts, but I'm going to go ahead out on a limb and say that this is not what's going to happen here. They're talking about a new chips that exist for Haswell, the same chips that will work for Broadwell. So we're talking about user replaceable parts again for at least another generation after that, which is good news for everybody listening to this for sure.
We like that. We should probably take a moment to thank one of our sponsors this week. IT Pro TV is sponsoring Twitch. We want to thank them for that. And Ryan, you want to tell folks a little bit more about IT Pro TV?
I can do that. If you're listening to us, chances are you already know a lot about technology, and chances are that you're already acting as the IT guy for your friends and family. But have you ever thought about working in IT professionally? It can be difficult to know where to start, what to study, what certificates you'll need. I know there's a lot of acronyms that need to be organized in order to get down that path. You'll need to validate your skills and get hired. If you're already an IT professional, you know that the world of information technology is changing all the time. Vendors release new tech, new certifications, and it can be difficult to keep up. So IT Pro TV is a video network dedicated exclusively to the world of information technology. Whether you're looking to jumpstart a career in IT or already working in the field, IP Pro TV supplements traditional learning methods with fun and engaging, or in a fun and engaging way that maximizes your learning and prepares you for those certification exams, which are always going to be fun. They have over 100 hours of content, 20 hours being added each week, which is a lot. Growing episode library with video courses in CompTIA, I'm going to mispronounce that now, Microsoft, Cisco, more. Courses cover topics like network security, laptop repair, VLAN, subnetting, all those fun networking things. It's organized by exam objective, making it easy to target areas successfully pass certification tests you're prepping for. IT doesn't have to be boring, which may be a surprise to many people out there. It's an easy and entertaining way to learn, so that's definitely an advantage. If you're already studying with a book or enrolled in a certification or technical degree program, this is a great supplement to learn at your own pace. I can definitely appreciate that. Shows are streamed live and are also available on demand worldwide through your Roku, computer, mobile device in both HD and SD quality. There's one monthly price gives you access to membership with constant updates. It's comparable to the cost of a study guide, but much cheaper than going to IT bootcamp. There's no hassle. There's an easy cancellation policy. There's also direct interaction with the hosts via live chat during the show and a web-based Q&A specific to the topic being studied, which is something, again, that people that watch us should be pretty familiar with. If this approach looks and sounds familiar to you, there's a reason. The guys behind IP Pro TV are huge fans of Twit. They have over 10 years of experience in e-learning and were inspired by Leo's NAB talk to start IT Pro TV. They even use the same cameras, microphones, lighting, and TriCaster equipment that we do. So they've got that going for them. itpro.tv/twitch. itpro.tv/twitch. And upgrade your brain with the most popular certifications recognized by employers. There's also a free preview on the site itself if you want to check out some of their videos and their live stream. Subscriptions are normally $57 per month or $570 for the entire year. We have a special offer, as we tend to do, because they're huge fans of Twit. If you sign up between now and the end of the year and use the code TWITCH50, you'll get 50% off your subscription for the lifetime of your account. That's only $28.50 a month or $285 for the year. That's itpro.tv/twitch and use the code TWITCH50 to get 50% off. That is half off, ladies and gentlemen. We thank IT Pro TV for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware, and good luck to them.
Thank you so much. We are almost done with graphics news for this week. NVIDIA GeForce's the experience, the overall experience. I just want to hold my hands up and make a beatific face. Shadowplay is the latest addition to the GeForce Experience platform. That's all the sort of drivers and software and accessories and tune-up options that are available inside of the GeForce drivers. And this one allows GPUs starting with Kepler to record game footage locally or stream it online via Twitch.tv, which is a big deal for a large number of gamers in the planet who want to capture their footage, post it on YouTube, create videos around it, you know, post it on Twitch.tv. And it's free, which is kind of a nice thing. So they're looking at, like, you know, Fraps, XSplit, Raptor, Shadowplay. And obviously NVIDIA is trying to beat them all because that's what NVIDIA tries to do. See, Scott wrote this up for PC Purr. He tried it on StarCraft 2 and Battlefield 3. And also wants to point out that Shadowplay should work with any DirectX 9, 10, or 11 full-screen game. Quote, unfortunately, that also means that gaming in Windows mode is not supported, at least not at this time. And recording or streaming from OpenGL is not mentioned at all, which means Minecraft and SteamOS are not going to work with Shadowplay. That's a big deal, at least in, you know, amongst most of my friends, everybody's games. Whether they're 20-something years old or 40-something years old, it's a staggering number of people I know where everything they run is inside of Steam. So that's a huge chunk of people that hopefully they will figure out how to get coverage.
Steam OS.
Oh, okay.
SteamOS.
My confusion. I misread that. I apologize. I thought it was Steam Games. So SteamOS.
Right.
Yeah. I was like, that's a big hole. So my apologies to NVIDIA and Scott for misreading that. Basically, if you want to try it out, Shadowplay is available now. It'll take seconds to download. It's free. You should probably have at least a GeForce 650 if you want to run it. Anything lower than that, you are probably going to run into emotional trauma and pain. So just saying.
What's cool about this is that it does it without using any of your CPU cycles and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So it's encoded on the GPU and then just sent to storage. So if you're a person who uses Fraps to record game footage, you're going to see a huge drop in how much compute power it takes to record it. If you've ever been using a game and hit record on Fraps, you'll notice you'll usually see your frame rate drop fairly noticeably. That doesn't happen with this. And also, rather than needing, I don't know, 2 gigs, 3 gigs a minute, I don't know what it was, but Fraps kind of records uncompressed or almost uncompressed, and this is much better than that. So you'll save disk space. It's not, it's compressed, so it's not going to be a perfect copy, but I think it'll still be better than what you get with Fraps for sure.
Other notable releases this week, exciting week for tablets. Lenovo dropped kind of out of nowhere the 8-inch and 10-inch Android Power Yoga tablets, and they are very distinctive looking, although when I posted this on Twitter the other day, I got a lot of comments like, oh, Lenovo's making a Macintosh keyboard. And if you look at it closely, there is a certain familiarity to anybody who spent a lot of time with Mac keyboards. But scroll down to the next picture, and you'll see why this gets really interesting, especially for people who use, you know, their tablet, whether it's for school or for work or for long trips. They're talking about like 18 hours of battery life. Quad-core MT8125 processor running at like 1.2 gigahertz, a gigabyte of DDR2 memory, 16 giga internal storage, and big, big batteries, 9,000 milliamp hours in the 10-inch version, 6,000 in the 8-inch version, micro SD, micro SIM card, 3G, not a super high speed connection there. Micro USB, which is a good thing, a headphone jack, and 802.11b, G, and N, Bluetooth 4.0. So sort of the full complement of connections. The 8-inch tablets selling for $250 from Best Buy and Lenovo. The 10-inch is selling for $300 from just about everywhere. This is a you have one? Is it wonderful?
Yeah, I got the 8 and the 10 in, So first impressions are it feels like a pretty well-built device. The idea of this curve, besides I think giving you some room for battery, is that
it's a handle.
Kind of hold it by that. Yeah, it's like a handle. It kind of their documentation kind of shows you changing the center of gravity. Instead of it being directly on the bottom here, it's moved over to here. So it's a little bit more comfortable to hold one-handed. I like the stand on it, right? I love that. And it's actually kind of it's adjustable until it flips over because of the weight. but we were playing around with the 8 and the 10 yesterday. We just got them in, and it's pretty good. The 10-inch, I think they both have the same screen resolution. Mm-hmm. And the 10-inch kind of shows that it's a little bit too low resolution for my taste. This is the 8-inch here. And, you know, if you put it side by side next to the Nexus, the new Nexus 7 or something like that, you can definitely tell a screen resolution difference. But general use seems to be just fine. Performance is a question mark as well, because it's using, is it an older MediaTek SoC, something like that, that has been around for a while. So it's not going to stun anybody in performance. But if those battery life metrics live up, I'll be really impressed with this. So it's an interesting form factor, right? Like, it's thin, but then you've got this place where it's not thin. So how does that affect how you carry it, store it, something like that?
you're going to need a slightly deeper backpack.
yeah. But I think it's fairly light. It doesn't feel super heavy. And I think part of that might be because, again, the handle that you kind of have now makes it, even if it is a little bit heavier than the Nexus 7, doesn't really feel like it. The camera quality is pretty low, but, you know, we're getting ready. We're kind of just beginning to run it through the battery tests and the performance tests to kind of see where it stands. But it's an interesting, I don't know if I agree with the Yoga branding being on this, because I thought Yoga had a pretty specific feature set from Lenovo, but it's pretty nice.
It says sliding mechanical parts that could eventually fail if you beat the hell out of them. And I would also like to, as I make that joke, in case anybody from Lenovo is listening, I'd like to point out I've never actually seen or heard of a Yoga hinge failing. I'm making the humors, because we do that here at Twitch sometimes. It's funny. TechRepublic also posted a pretty solid review last week of the Transformer Book T100 convertible notebook. It's Asus tablet/keyboard combination. And there's a lot of these that are starting to pop up in this $350 price range. Because I got a lot of responses like, why would you get a Yoga when you can get the T100? So there's certainly a lot of mindshare going on around this. This price point, we're seeing like Windows 8.1 laptops in the $350 price range. We're seeing tablets and 8.1 tablets in the price range. We're seeing just a lot of options out there. But this is Bay Trail's Atom chip, which we'd like to point out is not your father's Atom. It's not even your old Atom. It is a much faster part and performs better. Really nice write-up, though, at techreport.com. If you are thinking about buying something that is very small and very portable, I like that shot with the nickel on the side of it. You know, it is a 0.4 inch thick tablet, and it is pretty reasonable in terms of its performance. You know what I mean? This is not your gaming machine. This is not going to replace your workstation. This is not going to for anything more than the lightest of video editing. You know, but it's kind of funny. They even looked at some, you know, entry level sort of low power gaming on it. And it's, I think it ended up impressing at the Tech Report, but I'm going to make you go to the techreport.com to read the entire article, because they did the research.
They did a good job.
One last thing before we sort of move on to the question portion of the show. Nand, I don't know when that man sleeps, but take a look at the benchmarks he ran on the iPad Air. It's funny, Anand went into this review thinking, you know, sort of the iPad is dead to me. The iPad Air is silly. Why would you want an iPad Air when you have the same processor in the iPad Mini? You know, once the iPad Mini has the Retina display, and this thing is fast. It's got a slightly larger thermal envelope than the Mini, so they can push the processor a little bit faster. But the thing that really surprised me was looking at the benchmarks. And depending on, like, you know, Geekbench did a ton of benchmarks on this, and Nan did a ton of benchmarks on this. And the short answer is, holy crap, this is much faster. It's much faster. It's single core applications as much fast as multiple core applications. And if I read slowly through this article another time, I could probably find the line that Anand basically says this probably has more power than any iOS app can currently use. But, you know, running as fast as the Microsoft Surface 2, it's a little bit faster in some benchmarks than the iPhone 5S. It's faster than the Transformer Book T100. It's a lot faster than a lot of the phones and the 7-inch tablets out there from other manufacturers. So it's also more expensive. It's a high-end tablet, but the performance is looking really, really good from several directions. So I just wanted to point that out, because I know there's a lot of people out there using iPads. And if you've been thinking, if you've been on the fence about buying the iPad Air and waiting out for the Mini, I would definitely recommend reading, and pretty much everybody's reviews this hit, using the tablet hit this week. So I just thought Anand's benchmarks were pretty impressive. The dude
knows his way. I got to use it for about 15 minutes. I was actually saw him this week, actually. And it's pretty impressive. It really is. But, you know,
iOS.
You know, these benchmarks are impressive. Yeah, but it's iOS. So kind of, you know, I don't. If that's your platform, then go that way. But
the Apple filth will not be found inside of your office or home.
Well, we have those devices here. It's just my tablet that I use every day.
iOS devices.
Some of my best friends use iOS, right? you know, like the tablet I use every day is the Nexus 7. So,
right.
You know, the immediate thing I thought was, well, now all my Google stuff doesn't work the same way right away, right? So, because I debated going to Best Buy today and picking one up and buying it, but I don't know.
You're not going to. Let's be honest.
Well, I might to review it. I might to, you know, have it here for comparative purposes. I do that stuff all the time, unfortunately. But, you know, at $500, I would like to not.
I don't know. I will say I've got that are pretty hardcore early adopters. And it was interesting watching some of the guys that several people I know that went into it. Like, you know, my buddy Grant picked one up and he was like, oh my God, this is so much faster. Oh my God, this is so much lighter. So I will say for people who are hardcore iPad users, if you are thinking about buying things for the children for Christmas and you should not be buying a new iPad for yourself, you probably do not want to get hands on with the iPad Air. Because I've got a couple friends of mine. Yeah, they were like, no, I'm not going to. No. And then they got it home and suddenly two more people pulling up new iPads.
Awesome.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Awesome news.
Oh, my goodness. You don't choose a plan. You just pay for what you use. What am I talking about here? Well, this week in computer hardware is brought to you by Ting.com. I am a Ting.com user. It's a mobile phone service that makes sense. You save money with Ting. You pay for what you use. You don't have to have a contract. And you can pretty much have unlimited devices on one account. Let me state that really clearly. One account, all the devices you want. You got seven people in your family. You need seven phones and a couple of tablets. Done. You can do that on Ting.com. Ting is a no BS. They're an MVNO. MVNO is a hard thing to say with braces. Ting's an MVNO of the nationwide Sprint network, and they want to reduce the cost of having wireless connectivity anywhere you go. There's no contracts. There's no early termination fees. Matter of fact, if you are paying an early termination fee to come to Ting, they will credit 25% of your ETF up to $75 per device. If you purchase your device through Ting, you port your number, submit your final bill with your ETF detailed from your previous carrier, you can actually get money back from Ting to help, you know, the pain of that early termination fee. Go to ting.com/ETF for more information on that. But it's really simple, right? You bring your device to Ting or you buy your device from Ting. And that's kind of the core of this. They're not doing fancy financial machinations where you think you're paying nothing for a phone and you're actually paying a couple grand for it over a couple of years. It's really simple. You buy your device, you sign up with Ting, or you sign up with Ting and buy your device, and you pick your rates are extra small through XXL, you know, for voice messages, text messages, the amount of data, it's all built. So if for one reason, you know, one of the kids has a phone and they do 10,000 text messages in a month, you're not going to pay $10 million for it. You know, it may bump them from medium to large to extra large, but there's a nice consistent increase. And if you don't, you know, if you set everything to extra small, you're spending a minimum amount for month. No weird add-on charges, voicemails included, caller ID is included, tethering is included. You can use it as a hotspot, three-way calling, call forwarding. There's no extra $3 a month for this or $5 a month for that. No weird line items on your bill. They spell it out really simply. You can have unlimited devices on a single account and maybe $25 on your first Ting device. Do us a favor. Support This Week in Computer Hardware by going to twitch.ting.com. That's twitch.ting.com. And if you do, you're going to get $25 off your first Ting device. And I'll tell you something. Take a look at their calculator. You might be able to save a lot of money if you move from your current carrier, your current plan, over to Ting.com. And if there's an early termination fee, like we mentioned before, Ting's going to try to help you out with that. Twitch.ting.com. Save $25 on your first Ting device and support this week in computer hardware. We want to thank Ting for their support.
Definitely. So what do you say we get into some... Oh, you had something else before we get into questions?
I'm going to do one thing before we go to questions. It is time for Twit's annual audience survey. We want to hear from you. Please visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It only takes a few minutes. It's completely anonymous, and your feedback will help us make Twit even better. And we thank you for your continued support, because if you're not listening, there's not a whole lot of point in us doing this. Ryan and I can just chat on the phone.
Make sure you check that regularly listen to This Week in Computer Hardware. Right?
Please. twit.tv/survey. Help us. Help you. Speaking of which, Chris, I feel your pain. He says, hi, guys. I made a big mistake some months ago involving static electricity. Don't want to discuss it. Embarrassed. Moving on. My computer has been limping along in functionality since. No video encoding, no graphic intensive games, i.e. crashes and burns, as does any Windows Live program. The moment I open it, Firefox will only run in safe mode. Chrome hates to acknowledge new tabs. Weird, fun issues. As of the Windows 8.1 update, my screen is taken to flickering anywhere. My mouse moves and previous pages, Windows ghosts across the screen, reverting to Windows 8 or Windows 7. Thing, I've determined that I need to grab a bare-bones PC until I can afford a new build. My question is, what can I save? Is there a way that I can test individual components to see if anything is salvageable? Or at the very least, find out what's corrupt. I'd like to try and keep the optical drives and some of my storage hard drives, maybe the RAM, maybe not. Probably avoid anything connected directly to the motherboard. If you can steer me towards a non-strobing light, I'd appreciate it. Ouch, Chris. I hope you had your data backed up. And, you know, if you haven't backed up this week, you should back up. I just want to say that.
Weekly reminder.
Static is a nightmare. You know, because you never know if it's like one stupid transistor or resistor or capacitor, you're just kind of semi-doomed. I also want to say, like, you might want to sort of image your hard drive to an external drive, back up your data to an external drive. And just in case you haven't, just zero that thing out, wipe it out, and start over again. You know, the thing that the advantage that Ryan really has and I kind of have is, you know, if I have a computer that's misbehaving, you know, I can swap out components or at least pull out of it till I find one that may be causing all of the problems. Ryan definitely has the ability. He could basically, you know, you take two PCs side by side and you start swapping components. It's a really interesting way to try to figure out what's broken. But I always, you know, in situations like this, my first thought is always like, man, if you can grab a spare hard drive, you know, or if there's some way you can get to a hard drive you can use to sort of do a clean install of the operating system, that's the first thing I do, just in case there's something particularly screwy with the hard drive from the static electricity or the data on the hard drive. And then if you start getting all of the same things, I would start working backwards from there. You know, is there a VGA output or can you connect your monitor directly to your motherboard and take the GPU out of the question? Does a friend have a GPU you can borrow to load onto your machine to see if it's a GPU specific issue that's causing your strange and wondrous fireworks on there? You know, do you have a really, really nice friend that'll let you borrow a couple of sticks of memory? You know, because that's a lot of love from a friend to if they let you put their several $100 GPU inside of your machine or their memory
that may be potentially compromised. Yes.
Yes, and that's kind of like if it's something particularly squirrely with the motherboard or in the power supply in the motherboard, plugging into your system may trash their gear, and that will probably make you somewhat less than popular with them, at least for a short period of time. Anything I'm missing here? I mean, it's a nightmare.
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, static or not, troubleshooting hardware is a pain in the butt. It really is when it's like this weird mystery problem. It's always an issue. If anything is salvageable, I wouldn't trust it. Right. Which is a tough thing to say, sorry, start over from scratch, but I don't know. I would take let's borrow some things and see if I can get this system stable one component at a time. and then go from there. But
yeah, we got an interesting note from the chat rooms. They said run a Linux live from CD, much easier testing than replacing the drive off the bat. Just my 2 cents, which is a good idea. I'm a huge fan of Puppy Linux. You can boot that off of a DVD super easy or a USB drive. Yeah, it's tough. It's just a wicked ripping pain. And if you don't have a couple of PCs around the house of a relatively similar vintage that'll allow you to swap parts, it gets really hard to do. So part by part, eliminate one part at a time, and hopefully something will turn out to be the issue. And hopefully it's not the power supply, since invariably the power supply is the last thing people check. Chris, good luck. And if you haven't backed up your data, do us a favor, back it up now before we go any farther. One last question before we go this episode. We got an email about first-time building advice. He says, I enjoy the show, and I like hearing about the new PC hardware and your take on the other tech topics you cover. Thank you, Joe. Joe says, I don't play PC games, so I use the Xbox for my gaming fix. I am sure the PC games are better, but I'm just not worth the effort, in my opinion. Please don't ban me from the show. I'm pretty handy fixing computers for my friends and family. I am in the market for a new desktop to replace my current media center, which sits in the basement stripping away the ads. I was on the fence about building my next PC, but after having my manhood challenge, I feel I have to build it. My questions are, do you have any advice for the first-time builder? Do you have any sites that... The build process. I was going to go with Windows 8. Would you wait for 8.1? No. And 8.1 is here, so you're good to go on that. Have you checked out the pcper.com/leaderboard, Joe? it's not building advice, but it's the next best thing, which is a list of parts that are going to work together at a given price point to give you sort of pretty much the best overall performance for the amount of money you want to invest. For the media machine you're talking about, you could probably get away with one of the less expensive builds, not to suggest that you shouldn't spend a lot of money, but there is so much power for a Core i3 or a Core i5, unless you're doing some really crazy re-rendering or transcoding on the fly, like that 8600K or, a Core i3 or a Core i5 will probably be more than enough power for anything you're going to do.
Specifically, since he says he's not playing PC games,
right?
Your need for like a high end graphics card is gonna be pretty minimal. Even if you're using it as a media center, you might be able to get away with just like the Haswell integrated graphics, like right there on that Core i5 4670, $240 part would be pretty good. It depends again what size you're gonna build into it too. But that's one thing that we haven't done at PC Per that I probably should do is. There are still people that are learning to build systems for the first time. And I guess, those of us who have just been doing it for 15 years, just like, oh, well, just put in a new video card. And maybe some people aren't comfortable with that, or the idea of taking an order from Amazon.com that shows up in a big box to building a computer. We that's something maybe we need to do. Maybe we can do on this show as well, some kind of like piece by piece, partial, how to do this building a PC type of thing. So, because I'm sure. Well, there are a lot of people here who are quite comfortable with it. There are probably some people here who aren't as comfortable, even if they've done it before.
True that. Yeah. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we have to move on to our next part of the day. Mr. Ryan Stroud is in benchmarking heck. I could venture a guess for what you're benchmarking, but I'm not going to do that in case I get you in trouble with the person who sent you the thing you're benchmarking.
Won't hurt my feelings.
And I'm actually excited. I'm going to be at SEMA next week for Techzilla. So I'm going to be getting my geek on with all of the car. Well, all of the cars will belong to me, or at least I'll be able to drool on all of the cars. Off-road vehicles, race vehicles, import tuners, exotics. I plan on drooling on lots of multi-million-dollar show vehicles, or at least getting as close as the little red velvet rope will let me. And if you want to see some of those videos, go to youtube.com/techzilla or techzilla.com. It's going to be exciting. PCPer.com is the website where you can find Mr. Ryan Shrout doing the amazing testing. PCPer.com/leaderboard is where you find the bills we were mentioning earlier. And if you want to tweet at us, Ryan Shrout or at Patrick Norton. So outside of the secret benchmarking hell you're going through, any big stories coming up on PC Per next week?
We have a couple of motherboards we're probably going to post reviews of. I'm looking to test these Lenovo yoga pads, these yoga tablets, I guess what we'll call them. And we also, I also did get that Asus T100 Bay Trail kind of convertible tablet notebook that I took with me on my last trip to see if I could just use it as my main device. So we'll have some stuff on that up this week as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for this week in Computer Hardware. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Schrupp.
See you next week on Twitch.